Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Still just a dude.
That's it. I don't think I'm adding any more titles to mine.
You had one line.
Yeah, I had one line. I blew that.
Once we get this squared away and you get used to it, I'm not going to change it up again.
All right.
Well, I can be elected president. I won't change it.
Well, you can change it. We'll keep adding your titles as you accrue them.
as I accrue them.
Yeah, I'll just stay the same. I'll just record mine so that I can just cut it in there so I don't have to think about it.
Like a laugh track?
Yeah. That's what I am, a laugh track. A laugh track to life.
So how's everything going?
Good.
We haven't recorded it about a week and a half, I think, right?
Well, it just seems longer because we recorded on time the last time, and we're recording late this time.
Life seems to get in the way like that sometimes.
A lot of times it does.
Yeah. So you guys had your auditions for your upcoming summer shows?
Yep, we've had our auditions and got them cast, and we'll have our first cast meeting in another week or so.
Mm-hmm. And you all are doing the Addams Family, right?
Addams Family in June and Elf in July.
I saw where you roped Owen into coming out again.
Yep. Got him to come out. He's going to be Gomez.
Yeah, Owen is a lawyer at my law firm.
And he's also an extremely talented actor, singer, and dancer.
He is. He's very good. I didn't know if he was going to do the show, though, because he said he might not. But then I guess you guys convinced him otherwise. So
well, he has a throat situation going on that's being monitored by the doctor. And so he was afraid that might keep him from being able to perform at his best.
And it is a musical. So
that's right. So when somebody can't sing and it's a musical, that kind of hampers the operation.
Well, I'm glad he's going to be in it because I really enjoy seeing Owen in plays. He's very good.
Well, we've got another guy that was very good last year. So we with Owen's concurrence, we have drafted him in as the understudy for the part.
Oh.
Now, he's also got a situation going on where he blew out his ACL and meniscus and has to have surgery for that. So we really have two half guys to cover this part that between the two half of them, they make one whole. So hopefully between the two of them, we get one person.
So you have a go and you have a mez.
That's right.
Well, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a really good show.
I think it will be. Anybody that's going to be in the area in June, we'd love to have you come see our show.
I bet the set's going to be pretty cool, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, the amazing thing about it is here it is January, and our set crew already has the set built, basically.
Really?
Now, it's not at the park. What they're doing is they're building the sections at our warehouse and stacking them up and numbering them. So when they bring the sections to the amphitheater, they just piece them together like a puzzle, and it's ready to go.
And it's already built?
Yeah.
Totally?
Yep. It's not painted, but it's built. The sections are.
Is that like a new world's record?
Yeah, it'll be the earliest we've ever had the set put together on stage.
Usually you guys are rushing around there at the very end trying to get it done.
Especially last year. Last year was the worst. But yeah, it's going to be up and ready for use probably in March.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we're not doing the podcast today talking about Huntington's outdoor theater scene.
That's right. This is not Still Waiting for Guffman.
It is not. But, you know, sometimes we get catch up on different things. We haven't talked for a while, so.
Well, there you go. Yeah. We'll let you know more in June.
This episode, we're going to be talking about impeachment.
Well, there's a topical topic.
It's kind of in the news right now.
Yeah, kind of. It's all that's in the news every night and day.
It is. It's all it seems to be on there.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to try to avoid any kind of taking sides on one thing or the other. We're just going to talk about a little bit about the overview of impeachment.
Just knowledge.
Knowledge, the process.
To impart upon you.
And kind of equate how this impeachment trial relates to a regular jury trial in real life. Like if you're actually doing a real trial.
Yeah, because part of it kind of confuses me, so I'll be glad. This will be an education for me as well.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. It confuses me, too, because I don't really understand what they're doing.
Well, you know, we did an episode about impeachment.
We did.
A while back.
Yeah.
And I thought I understood how this process worked. But what they've done so far has kind of, it's kind of counter to the way I thought this was supposed to work, so.
Yeah. So, to give you some basic overview, an impeachment trial is carried out in the Senate, which I'm sure if you're paying attention to the news, you're aware of. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presides over the impeachment if it involves the president. Otherwise, it's just essentially the vice president, the president of the Senate. Impeachment can expand beyond senior members of the White House. A Supreme Court of the United States justice may be impeached for committing treason, bribery, or high crime or misdemeanor. Impeachment charges must be drafted in the House of Representatives. So you have the House of Representatives who drafts the articles of impeachment, then it gets sent over to the Senate for the trial. The trial for the person undergoing occurs in the Senate, and it needs to have a 2/3 members present, also called a supermajority, to successfully remove a public official from office.
All right, now, a 2/3 majority present to vote, but does that mean you need a 2/3 majority in favor, or do you just need a majority of the 2/3 that are there?
Well, it says 2/3 of the members present, so I'm guessing that would be whoever's there, assuming you have a quorum to meet the requirements to actually conduct business.
Then 2/3 of the senators have to vote for impeachment.
Right.
Well, so, for conviction. It's not impeachment. He's impeached if it goes to the Senate. Yeah.
So if, say, there were 100 there, then you'd have to have 67, assuming everyone shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't show up for that, then I don't know what you would... I'm a little concerned that you wouldn't show up for that if you were a senator.
Well, that's one of the things they were saying, is that some of the candidates that are in the Senate are being hampered right now. Joe Biden can go around campaigning, and you've got some of the other ones, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, some of them that can't go around campaigning right now because they have to be at the Senate.
Well, and that's what they need to do because that's what the job is right now.
That's what they're being paid for right now.
So the way I was kind of looking at it, essentially the House of Representatives, that's kind of like your grand jury. So the grand jury in a criminal case is wherein the prosecutor has to convince a jury that there's at least probable cause to indict somebody for formal charges. So I think that's kind of a similar thing to the impeachment. You had in the House, you have that kind of acting like a grand jury almost.
But they do have to name what it is that they're indicting for. They can't just say, we think there's some criminal activity here and pass it on. Don't they have to say what the criminal activity is that they found?
They do, and that's they return an indictment, and then essentially what you have is like some sort of charging document, which shows you what you're charged with.
Right.
And that's what the grand jury signs, and then you're indicted, and there's an arraignment. You come before the court, and they read you the charges, so you're aware of what the charges are. And in order to impeach someone, you just simply have to have a simple majority, which is more than 50%, which is what the House had,
right,
along partisan lines. So essentially what that is they send over the indictment basically to the Senate, kind of like a grand jury would send an indictment over to the court. The old adage is that any decent prosecutor could actually indict a ham sandwich. So it's not a very hard burden to indict somebody.
Right.
It's a very low burden.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, it seems like it was kind of a simple burden for the House as well, because all they had to do was to have the simple majority, which was controlled by the Democrats, just vote for it. Now, I'm not making a comment about whether it's right or wrong, but I mean, it went along party lines and it was just like, boom, boom.
And if you're in the majority and you can't get your majority to vote the way you want them to, then something's wrong.
Yeah. Well, unless people actually vote their conscience, which I find it hard to believe that every single Democrat felt exactly the same way and every single Republican felt exactly the opposite the same way. I don't buy that, but that's just me being a little, I don't know.
cynical?
Cynical about the whole situation.
Well, but, you know, but that's one of the things, I mean, not saying whether he deserves to be impeached or doesn't deserve to be impeached, but one of the things that's bothered me about this whole thing is there have been members of the Democratic Party since the day Trump was elected that said, we need to impeach him.
Yeah.
I mean, from the day he was elected, he should be impeached.
Yeah.
So if you start off with that as your baseline, he should be impeached. then it's kind of like the boy that cried wolf. If something comes along, then all you have to do is say, hey, for the last 3 years, they've been saying I need to be impeached. They just, you know, they're just looking for excuses.
Right.
So it kind of waters the whole thing down. You had that one congresswoman that was elected, and at her rally when she was, you know, making her acceptance speech or whatever it was when she got elected, she was saying, now let's go impeach the MF-er.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, she just got elected. What evidence did she have of a high crime or misdemeanor, but she was going to impeach him?
Yeah.
And, I think they eroded their own case by being so vocal about it ahead of time rather than, you know, Trump's just kind of guy. You give him enough rope, he'll hang himself.
That's true.
I mean, that's the way I look at it. He's his own worst enemy.
So the Senate is where the trial takes place, like I said. The Senate itself is kind of like the jury, and the Chief Justice is kind of like the judge. Well, mm-hmm. Actually, that is a judge.
And I'll bet he hates that job.
Oh, I don't know if you noticed or not, but I think it was the first day or the second day, he actually admonished both sides for the way they were acting. He basically told them that they needed to act like they knew where they were. The Senate was not a place for this kind of bickering.
Remember who you're talking to.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be the elite governmental body of the United States. And remember who you're talking to. Basically, you had people get up there and say, look, if you don't vote the way we believe, then you're stupid.
Yeah.
Or if you don't vote the way we think you should vote, then you're guilty of treason. Well, that's not the way you win an argument.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is that the jury or the Senate, they kind of have the ability to make their own rules too, which
right.
is very different than a criminal trial.
You don't get
a criminal trial, pick a jury and say, okay, how do you all want to go about this? What do you want to do?
Do you want to have witnesses?
Yeah.
Do you want to have this many days of testimony? You know, what do you want to do?
Now that is something that is set by the judge. The mm-hmm. judge is the one who decides that.
And the judge has no real power in this.
No, he's just there to kind of make sure it flows smoothly. It's almost more ceremonial.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's almost like window dressing. He doesn't really, he can't overrule anything. He can't disallow anything or anything like that.
You know, the interesting thing is that, to touch back on a previous episode, at the end of one of the days, they concluded business or something like that, and he said, do I hit the gavel now? You know, he hit the gavel.
Yeah.
Because, you know, judges don't hit gavels.
Right.
Like I said, they really don't. So yeah. It's kind of odd for the judge to hit the gavel.
And he, John Roberts, that's his name, right?
Yep.
And he had said that he didn't want to be considered any type of political affiliation while he was on the Supreme Court. He wanted this to be a fair court
yeah.
that ruled on the issues, not down partisan lines. So now he finds himself in a position that he probably really doesn't want to be in because of how partisan this whole issue is. And it shouldn't be a partisan issue. It should be an American issue.
So procedurally, the way it's going now, they're making opening statements, and that's where they are, I think. I wasn't able to watch any of it on Friday.
Well, the Democrats have presented the case because the Democrats from the House are the ones that come and act as the prosecutors,
correct.
Right?
They're the prosecutors.
And they have presented their case of the evidence of why they arrived at those articles of impeachment.
Yes. And I think the defense has presented their side of the case, too, and they've made some arguments as well.
I think they presented part of it, but I think Monday they finish up.
Right.
Because they were complaining because their arguments came on Saturday, and nobody's watching TV on Saturday.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of reminds me of where they are now, I know they're calling them opening statements, but to me it almost seems, at this point, we're at almost like a motion to dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have that in a criminal trial, too.
Right.
Where if the indictment is procured improperly, there's something wrong with it, or the testimony that was presented doesn't meet the criteria of the crimes you're charged with, then you could do a motion to dismiss, and then it has to be ruled on.
Uh-huh.
So I can almost see that the opening statements, although they're called opening statements, this is almost like a motion to dismiss. They're trying to say, look, this doesn't even, we don't need to go any further. You need to dismiss this now. It was improper, essentially.
Right.
But that's it. So there's different ways you can look at it. To me, it seems kind of like a motion to dismiss, but it's also kind of opening statements as well, presenting their side of the case.
Well, and at any point, they can just conclude it and say, take a vote. And that's basically where your motion to dismiss comes from, because Judge Roberts can't just say, well, we're going to dismiss it.
Well, it's up to the jury. The jury,
The jury being the senator.
Procedurally, if you did a motion to dismiss, the judge would be the person who rules on that.
Exactly.
The jury doesn't get to rule on a motion to dismiss.
But in this case...
it's out of the jury's hands.
Yeah.
But in this case, we've just kind of smashed it all together and turned it into this sideshow of procedure that whatever happens.
Whatever happens, happens. Yeah. Ultimately, what has to happen to settle it, whatever the outcome is a vote.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and I don't know that the defense team for Trump did themselves a favor with part of their opening statement, because I didn't get to watch it, but evidently they talked about what their witnesses would testify to and how this is what their witnesses would show.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you don't want to have witnesses, why are you talking about what they would show? Because
right.
That's going to just pique my interest. I'm going to wonder, okay, well, maybe we should hear what they have to say then.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand that strategy at all. And to me, in a legal sense, it almost seems like you're kind of opening the door for that.
And this whole process seems kind of screwed up for that, because you don't have that option to do that. You can't force their hand to do that.
Well, it seems to me what they're doing is they're trying to spin it their way politically, knowing that they already have the votes in their back pocket that, Well, here's what our witnesses would have said anyway. We're making a record of what they would have said. We're not going to put them on because we don't have to, because
right.
We have the votes, because we're not going to go any farther.
So it's political posturing so that if you vote against impeachment, you can go to your base after that and say, well, here's why. You know, this is what they were saying. They didn't have a case.
Yeah.
So I was able to dismiss it, because, you know, everybody that votes, whichever way they vote, they're going to have to answer to their constituents.
Yeah.
So why they did vote in favor or why they voted against. So you better have some type of reasoning that backs up what you did, rather than, well, I'm a Republican, I voted with the Republicans, or I'm a Democrat, I voted with the Democrats.
Well, and this goes to the whole rules of evidence as well in a criminal trial. You have evidence presented, or you can have what's called a proffer. And a proffer is essentially an attorney proffering to the court what the evidence would show. It's not the actual evidence itself. It's saying, well, here's the evidence would show that this, and this. That's not actual evidence. That's you telling the court what the evidence is. The actual evidence is the witness testifying.
Right.
And to me, having them proffer that a witness would say this doesn't seem like it meets the criteria. I don't want to hear your proffer. I want to hear the witness.
Yeah, that's basically hearsay.
Yeah.
That you're offering as evidence that wouldn't be allowed in a court, because you're saying this is what, if this witness testified, this is what they would say. Well, you don't know that's what they'd say. Nobody can prove that unless you have that guy up there.
Now, the other way you could kind of view these opening arguments too is there's a thing called a judgment of acquittal. And that's when the prosecution puts on their entire case and you make a motion as the defense and say, well, you know what? So what? All that's true, so what? It doesn't amount to a crime.
Right.
And that would be something that could be brought up at a later time, too. And there's almost kind of a similar thing with these proffers and these evidence as well. You could almost view it as a judgment of acquittal, too, that it's either one of those mechanisms to end the proceedings. Again, that's in a criminal proceeding. That is after the prosecution has a chance to fully present their case, after they rest. And that's when that would take place.
You know, that a clip that I saw made me think these guys should be in favor of term limits so they don't get in the same situations like Lindsey Graham was. They have the clip of Lindsey Graham testifying or speaking or whatever during Clinton's impeachment.
Yeah.
And he's saying, well, because they said, well, there's no crime. He says, well, you don't have to have an actual crime committed to impeach somebody for high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And then you turn around and see him speaking now, and he's saying, the Democrats have offered no evidence of a crime. How can you convict somebody of high crimes and misdemeanor when there was no crime? All right, which is it, Lindsey?
Yeah.
Which way are we going here, bud? You've played both sides of that fence.
Yeah, that it just depends on which way the wind's blowing.
Yeah, and but that's what's happening, is we're not looking at getting at the truth. We're looking at spinning it and just following party lines.
So... next week, I guess there will be a vote where they're going to make a determination about whether or not they're going to allow anyone to call witnesses.
Right.
Which, if it goes down party lines, is that'll be the end of it. They're not going to allow it, and then they're going to vote on the actual impeachment itself. I think they should have gone ahead and set up the procedure first rather than changing it midstream. I don't like that. I think they should have set the procedure, say, we're going to do it this way. I think that would have been a better, cleaner way to do it too, because that way if the case gets dismissed, then your feet are held to the fire. You're more accountable because you don't have some sort of excuse to say, well, I heard enough from the what they said the witnesses would say. I heard enough. That's BS. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So I think they should have set the rules ahead of time and said, yes, we're either going to have witnesses or not. Here's how we're going to do it, and we're going to go for there. I don't like the idea that they went forward with these opening arguments, and then they're going to decide the procedure. So that's just my two cents about it. If this is supposed to be like a judicial proceeding, and my understanding is that it's supposed to be like a trial, one side should be able to present their case, absent some sort of motion to dismiss or judgment of acquittal or something along those lines. It's hard for me to have an impeachment or an indictment and to not allow the prosecution to put their case on. I don't understand. If this is supposed to be a trial, then why are you not allowing it?
Well, but here's what I'm confused about, though, is, all right, so the House issued their articles of impeachment, the two things that they felt met high crimes or misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And they passed those over.
Yeah.
They surely had their evidence of what brought that about. So why wouldn't they just present that evidence and that's enough? How long would this go on? Do you want to start having weeks and weeks of both sides presenting witnesses going on and trying to make a decision from there? Or shouldn't the evidence be passed over to the Senate and say, here's what we found. We found this meets the criteria, and here's the evidence that says why.
Well,
and then you review that evidence and decide, did it meet the criteria?
Well, because the House is not there to make a trial. The House is there to meet the basic criteria that there is enough for an impeachment. They vote on it. Then it goes to a trial in the Senate. Now, if you're comparing it to a criminal trial, at the grand jury, you just put on just enough evidence to get the indictment. You don't have to put on your full case at the preliminary stage like that. That's not the job of them. So I think that once you have a trial once you've met the preliminary burden to jump that hurdle and get over to the Senate for a trial, you may not have put all the evidence on. You've presented enough. It's up to the people who are trying it to flush out the full details that relate to those crimes. Now, I'm not saying you can go off on some sort of tangent about something else that's completely unrelated. I don't think that's germane to the impeachment. But if you have other witnesses which have light, can shed light on exactly what the person was impeached for, maybe some other witness that was discovered later or something along those lines but has actual knowledge of it, why wouldn't that be helpful to the trier of fact? I think you'd want to have that. I don't know.
Well,
I don't think the House was under any obligation to completely put everything on. I mean, I think they felt they had enough, so they made a vote and did it.
Well, then the question is that enough, what they came up with, to convict him, or do they need somebody else to come help them with their case?
Yeah.
But the other thing to try to keep in mind is the longer that we are tied up with this, the less of the government's real work is getting done.
Yeah.
There's things that need to be voted on and passed and debated, and laws are getting held up and everything else because of how much this is taken. So somewhere they have to draw a line in the expediency of this and saying, okay, enough's enough. And you know, I think it's a waste of time. I think everybody already knows how everybody's going to vote.
Well, and that's the unfortunate thing. And unlike a juror would in a criminal case, the senators have been voicing their opinions all along. They are pretty much going to vote along party lines, or said they would, and they've already pretty much decided. A true jury who came into a trial with some sort of preconceived notion about the case would be booted.
Exactly.
They would not be allowed to sit as a juror.
Right.
Because, no, you're not sitting here impartially viewing this. You've already got your mind made up. What are we even here for?
You wouldn't have made it through that boudoir set thing.
That's right. And the thing that bothers me is that the senators took an impartiality oath. They did at the beginning of the impeachment.
They also took partiality money, though, before that.
If they took these oaths seriously, then tell me how they're going to vote along strict party lines.
Again, that's right. It
does not make any sense to me.
They're just looking to pluck out the things that they can lean on to say, oh, here's why I didn't believe it, or here's why I voted the way I did. They're just trying to find something to back up their excuse for why they're voting party lines. And both places are guilty of it. House voted party lines, and the Senate is going to vote for party lines.
Exactly. And I mean, as much as this is supposed to be like a trial, I don't think it is like a trial at all. It's like you took a criminal court proceeding and took away all the things that make it good, and you just kept like the crappy grandstanding.
Well, yeah, you just had that as an outline to make it sound like a good idea, but it's really just a dog and pony show.
Pretty much, yeah. And one of the interesting things is that it is supposed to be like a trial if you kind of look at the history of the framers, how they presented this. Alexander Hamilton, he was actually the one who devoted the most attention to the impeachment function of the Senate in his papers and his writings. And Mitch McConnell had said that it's a political process, but according to Hamilton, it's not. Hamilton said in Federalist Number 65, a judicial character as a court for the trial of impeachments, and in Federalist Number 66, he repeatedly referred to the Senate as a court of impeachments. So it's supposed to be more like a court and less like a political process.
Right.
But the problem is that it's become so intertwined with partisan politics that I don't know how you get around that.
Well, here's one way. If you were able to pass as an article of impeachment an actual crime that was committed, it would be hard to ignore that. You know, that somebody, that the president of the United States committed an actual crime, such as what Richard Nixon did.
Yeah.
That was going to be, he was going to be impeached and he would have been convicted, I would say, because that was evidence of an actual crime. When you're getting into something else, I mean, even the one where they impeached, who was it, Johnson, back right after the Civil War, the one that replaced Lincoln after Lincoln was assassinated, and he removed one of Lincoln's appointees. And at the time, there was a law that they had passed specifically to keep him from doing that.
Right.
And he, you know, said, I'm not going to go along with that. I have the will and pleasure to remove and add in anybody I want. And so he did that, but he was violating the law technically. Now, they did, I think the only reason that they didn't impeach him is they did say, well, we passed that law because we didn't want him to be able to do that. And that's not really right, as later on they rescinded that law.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was kind of a political posturing, but you could say he broke a law to do that. So if you were actually going to get somebody, then get them for actually breaking a law.
That's true, but I don't think that's necessarily the gold standard we want to hold them to, because there's some things that are outside, maybe they're not a crime, but they're definitely outside what we want our president to be doing.
Well, sure. There's a lot of things that our presidents have been involved in, we don't want them doing. But what I'm saying is, if you want something that would be hard to defend along party lines,
certainly
it would be showing evidence of actually committing a crime.
I think, and this is my personal take on it, that the House should have to prove their case, and they should be allowed to do so with witnesses and evidence, not blocked by partisan politics. But on the other hand, there's a legitimate concern that many on the Democratic Senate side have already convicted Trump before the impeachment trial even begins.
Right.
And that's not good either. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing you said, that when people were elected into the House and whatnot, they said their first article of business is to impeach Trump. I mean, wait a second here. Why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have a problem with the politics in it.
You know, it's like you described some theory that when you come to court, you have to come with clean hands.
Yeah.
The clean hands theory. It's kind of like that. If you came in and we really thought that you were being reflective in what was going on, but when you state before any of these things took place that you're going to impeach the guy, it's hard to believe you're coming at this with an open mind.
Well, before she quit the presidential race, Kamala Harris asked about her support for removing Trump from office. Was that fair to the president, not having heard the evidence or anything along those lines?
Uh-huh.
She said, it's just being observant, said Harris, because he has committed crimes in plain sight. That's her position. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said he would do everything he can to make the impeachment die quickly. Well, what do you mean? Don't you want to hear the evidence and understand what's going on?
Sure, you already don't confuse me with facts. My mind's made up.
Ted Cruz said, we're going to reach a verdict, and the verdict is going to be acquittal. The verdict isn't going to be not guilty. I mean,
so this is a waste of the taxpayers' time and money going on because it's all being decided by partisan politics. And the vote is going to come down to that. I mean, there might be one or two that switch over one way or the other. And that's because their constituents, like, you know, Joe Manchin in our state, he's going to have a hard time because here he is in a Trump state that was like 75% for Trump.
Yeah.
And he votes to impeach him. he has to consider his political future. So he might be absent on that day, so he doesn't have to vote against his Democratic Party or for Trump.
Well, I saw an article this morning that said that he was in the favor of having witnesses.
Really? Well, yeah. Having witnesses and which way you vote are two different things, though.
That's true.
He plays game. He knows how to play the game, and he plays the game along to that point.
Well, and I think he among all senators probably has the most tap dancing to do.
Oh, yeah.
Just about any of them.
Yeah.
One thing that kind of bothered me is Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
He said he has vowed political retribution for displays of disloyalty. Said if any Republican lawmaker helped Democrats call a witness they hope to hear from, Paul said he would force a retaliatory vote on a controversial witness the senators hope to avoid. So basically he's saying, if you don't help us out as a Republican, then I'm going to make life for you really hard.
But he's kind of a nut anyway. I mean, he's always on the radical edge of a bunch of different things, and I don't know why the people of Kentucky keep electing him.
But let me ask you this. If you did that in a criminal trial, if you said,
hey,
you need to find this person not guilty, or I'm going to
hunt you down.
There are going to be retributions.
Yeah.
That would be a crime. That would be a criminal crime.
Yeah, that's threatening. Well, it's not threatening a witness. It's threatening a jury member.
Yeah, that is absolutely a crime.
Yeah.
And likewise, I mean, if you're saying that to a judge, if you're telling a judge they better rule a certain way.
Yeah.
That would be a crime too.
Right.
I mean, you're attempting to extort what you want through some sort of exterior influence. I mean, that to me is just sleazy.
So this whole thing is like hiding behind a legal process, but it's really not. It's a political process.
Yeah, it's just...
They don't operate within the same rules. They make their own rules. They decide what they will and won't comply with. And then it all just comes down to a vote. It has nothing to do with evidence.
I know, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
So, I think it is somewhat similar to a criminal trial, but you've taken all the things that, like I said, that are the hallmarks of a criminal trial and just kind of ripped them out, stuffed them around, and then put this label on it, and it's not a trial proceeding. It's essentially some sort of political circus.
It's like the casing around a sausage.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm not so sure the stuff inside the casing's that good for you either.
I know, that's what I mean. It looks nice from the outside, but you don't want to see what went in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of me, I don't know. I think I want to hear witnesses. I would want to hear evidence. That's just me. I don't want to have any kind of undue delay. I don't want this to last any longer, but I think it needs to be a resolution to it. And I think if you just vote without having witnesses presented and just based upon arguments, that to me, it leaves a lot unsettled, and it makes me as a voter very uncomfortable with the whole situation.
Well, here's the thing that bothers me too. If we drag this out much longer, you're getting into the election. Why can't the American people make a choice here? They've seen what's gone on. They've seen the evidence. We don't need to impeach the MF-er. Let's vote. If you think he's okay, then vote for him. If you don't think he's okay, vote for the other person, whoever that is. I mean, we have the ultimate vote. What happens if they impeach him and then we reelect him in 2020? Is that possible? You remove him from office and then he gets reelected. What are you going to do?
I don't know if you can do that or not. That's a good question.
Well, I mean,
I think if you are impeached and removed from office through this process, I don't think you are suitable or fit to run for that office again.
But what if the people vote for you?
I think there's got to be some.
I've never heard of anything that says if you got removed, you can't run again. He hasn't met the two-term limit. That's the only law there is you can't serve more than two terms.
Well, I'm just guessing that there's some law out there that says that.
I don't know. I mean, unless that would make you a felon, but I don't think it would make you a felon if you got impeached.
I think that if you are impeached from office, that makes you no longer able to hold that office. I'm just going to tell you that I think if there's not some sort of law, there's got to be some sort of case law out there which says that.
I would have the faith in the American people that instead of two partisan bodies making this decision, let the American people make the decision in 2020, and then we'll know whether he deserves to have office or not.
Well, that's all good and whatnot, but we're already past that. We're sitting here.
I'm just saying, I think it's a waste of time. I think that should have, at this point, now, if you did it a year after he was elected, okay, maybe so. But at this point, we're just, what, November's the general election, right?
Yeah.
So we're 10 months from electing somebody new one way or another. So by the time they wrap this up and get him out, you might be saving 6 months or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then, like I say, I would like to know if he could be reelected, because he's not going to take his name off the ballot. Even if he got impeached, he wouldn't take his name off the ballot unless there was something legally forcing him to.
You don't think he would hang his head in shame?
No, I don't think so. I think he would wear it like some kind of a battle scar or something like that. You know, he keeps telling you the economy's doing better, everybody's doing better, and what do they do for me? They impeach me. That's his view of it.
I know.
And you're not going to change his view. He's not going to hang his head in shame.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I asked Tommy about different legal terms we talked about. The first one is, what's an indictment?
An indictment is something that a grand jury returns that says there's enough evidence to look at this as a crime.
Right. And I don't know if I said what the standard is for a grand jury, did I?
You said it was a low bar.
Probable cause.
Probable cause. There was probably something happened there.
Right. And if you're looking at the House and trying to view this in the same way, I don't know exactly what their standard is, but I think it's at least probable cause.
Yeah.
I mean, it smells like a duck, walks like a duck. I think it's a duck.
Quack.
That's good enough right there.
That's right. Well, unless you get a goose.
Now, can you explain to me the difference between a proffer and evidence?
A proffer and evidence. A proffer is kind of when evidence is when you present things like witness testimony and what do you call those things when you record people's answers, a deposition,
yeah,
and some things like that, or physical evidence of things that show that the crime was committed. Proffer is when the lawyer kind of presents a synopsis of what he has, and this is what you will see and how the evidence will demonstrate this or that.
Right. So in the eyes of a court or an attorney, what is going on right now with these opening arguments is not evidence. It is simply a proffer of what the evidence would show or what the case is.
And it's a shaded proffer.
It is absolutely a shaded proffer. I mean, an attorney would never try to proffer something that's against their client. I mean, you would basically helping the other side out.
Right.
Now, you can't proffer something that's not true. That's unethical as well. But at the same time, you feel you can be free to present your best side of the story.
I would say in an impeachment proceeding, though, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not.
Well, the stakes are pretty daggone high.
Yes, but what I'm saying is I don't think there's the same penalty associated with it.
Yeah. Well, I just think that, regardless of what happens, there's going to be talk that the evidence, if they don't actually have witnesses, there will be talk that people will say, well, based upon the evidence. And that, to me, that's just improper, because there will not have been any evidence presented.
Yeah, the only evidence that could be presented is whatever's in the articles of impeachment as to why they thought that there was a crime committed.
Correct. What is a judgment of acquittal?
A judgment of acquittal is when the judge decides that there wasn't enough evidence and acquits and dismisses the case.
And that's a motion you make for a judgment of acquittal after the prosecution presents their entire case. It's kind of the so what. Yeah, well, so, okay, that's all true. So what?
But it doesn't amount to a crime.
Right. It doesn't meet the criteria or the elements for that crime.
Right.
And what is a motion to dismiss?
Motion to dismiss you make at the very beginning, and you say their argument is a joke. We didn't have my client was never anywhere near there, and we boo for immediate dismissal.
Well, I mean, but you're getting closer to talking about evidence there at that point, too. The evidence would show that my client was nowhere near there.
Well, they improperly charged him. He didn't do this, and they shouldn't have done that.
Well, whether the person did it or not doesn't really matter for a motion to dismiss. It's more of a kind of a technical type argument that there's something wrong or something lacking from it, not actually to the facts of the case.
Okay.
So, because for purposes of a motion to dismiss, you have to assume that all the facts are true, and that's kind of the standard you look at. So okay. It's just essentially, if this is all true, it still wouldn't matter.
So it's the difference between the motion to dismiss and the movement for acquittal is one is before the prosecution presents it and the other is after the prosecution presents it?
Correct.
Okay.
So, talking about the impeachment and where we are right now, it seems that we're kind of at some sort of hybridization of these kinds of type things, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
The whole process is just kind of weird to me.
But you can't really apply a normal legal process to this process.
No.
They're making their own rules and following their own things. And so anything that we've discussed as far as how cases go and things like that, you can't say, oh, wait, they can't do that. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, they can make their own rules. They're the judge, the jury, the executioner, whatever else they want to be too, I guess.
Right.
They can decide that.
But what it should be is that the American people kind of lose faith in what that process is, because and it's from both sides, because anytime all the votes are strictly down party lines, that just tells me nobody cared what the real truth was.
Yeah.
They just were voting in line with their party. That's all it was.
I agree. It's a sad day.
Yeah, I don't believe that just being the same party, it's not like being a hive. You know, they call that a hive mind or something like that, where you're all of one mind. It's not like that. You should have your own, and your constituents should all be different.
Well, I don't know. I think there's a problem comparing politicians to bees, because they're definitely not busy.
But they do take the honey.
They take our honey.
That's right, honey.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is GPS directions. I think the GPS is the best invention of these times. As a guy who spent most of his life trying to read a map with relatively little success, the GPS has gotten me places I probably wouldn't have ever found before. I mean, I couldn't even get a map refolded correctly, so how could I expect to read one? But the GPS has taken all the worry out of finding your way around an unfamiliar place. I think the first time I fell in love with the GPS was a family trip we took to Orlando. We stayed in a hotel that was in proximity to both Universal and Disney because we had plans to go to both. When I went online to register for a car rental at the Orlando airport, it said, "Do you want a GPS device?" Now, I should make note here that this was before pretty much every car now comes with them as standard equipment. This device got us everywhere we were going with ease, and we never had any problem. The best, though, was the morning of our departure. We were all running late and traffic was especially heavy, but even though we were really rushed for time and couldn't afford even one miscue en route, it guided me like a pro, right to our destination, and we made our flight. I then invested in my own and found it very useful on our summer beach trips, as well as finding potential customers for work needs. What I didn't realize is that these things have to have regular updates to guide you properly. To me, it is all just magic anyway, so I just plug it in and go. Imagine my surprise when one year I took a route that no longer existed, and ramps were moved and things, and we ended up in the middle of some tobacco road town in North Carolina. I was afraid we would all end up as barbecue. My family tries to tell me they will look at their phones and give me directions, but that doesn't work for me. I like to see when an exit or turn is coming up so that I can plan for it. My family has a tendency to say, that was a turn right there. The one we just went by. That doesn't help me at all. I say, why didn't you tell me sooner? And they say, I was on my phone. And I say, I know, and you should be on your phone, but you should be helping me, not posting windshield pics on Facebook. The only thing I don't like about GPS is when I have to stop at a rest stop for a bathroom break or pull off an exit to get gas or lunch or something. GPS doesn't understand this. It is relentless in its pursuit of your requested destination, and it recognizes no deviations. So as I pull off an exit to get gas, it starts panicking. Recalculating! Recalculating! Then it desperately gives you directions to make a left and go 500 feet and then another left and enter the ramp. Of course you don't do that because you still need gas. But you have no way to communicate to your GPS device. So it reverts to further desperation and starts spewing more directions to try and get your dumb ass back on track. It's looking for new routes, anything to appease its non-compliant master that will not follow directions. It finally resorts to shouting in its mechanical voice over and over, "Make a U-turn! Make a U-turn!" as a last resort of reason. It really should not be allowed to tell you to make a U-turn because, for the most part, they are illegal. Or maybe that is the GPS's way of getting back at you for non-compliance. I really wish that could be fixed, because it's hard for me to take the sound of disappointment my GPS has in its voice towards me whenever we reach this point. This has been Tommy's Random Thoughts.